My top five podcasters, Chris Lambert, and probably myself, but this ain't about that. The Mundane Festival is where you're at. If you've been tapped in, you know what's up. If you're a first timer, hey, welcome to the club. The cost of admission is simply a subscription, then rating and reviewing it wherever you listen. Don't worry about change ups, the cast won't break up. Even when that $1 million contract show up, a stand up guy who's a stand up comedian with a stance on everything from food to media. So welcome to the show, please take your seat. Let's find out what he's got in store this week. Who, me? I'm Don Will, your opening act. Thanks for coming out. Please clap. The Mundane Festival. With your host, Chris Lambert.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another edition of the Mundane Festival podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lambert. Today is Monday, December 6th, 2021. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast listening apparatus. And if you're really into this thing, go over to Apple Podcasts, give this show a 5-star review, let everybody know why you like it, because it's simply the right thing to do. And if you want to take your love and appreciation of this show to an even deeper level, go over to patreon.com/mundanefestival and subscribe for $3 a month for hours and hours and hours of bonus content. This is episode 547. There's no guest. It's just me in my apartment at my desk recording into the Zoom H4N recorder via my Rode Pod mic, like I've been doing for the past year or so. I've been doing this podcast for like almost 9 years, but what I'm saying is I'm doing it through this. I got this pod mic as a gift to myself almost a year ago, and I've been enjoying it, and I like talking into it, and I like delivering a podcast to the hundreds of you that listen on a weekly basis, and I appreciate it. My apologies for the delay. I've just been really busy. Some stuff I'll talk to you about at a later date. But I've just been really busy. And I think what I am going to do, I am putting the show on a hiatus until after the holidays. I've just been so busy. I haven't really taken very few breaks from this show. And with the day job and doing this play, it's just been a lot. And it's been a lot of driving, a lot of making appointments, being here and there for all this stuff. And I think it's wearing on me, and I don't want the podcast to suffer. Now, Patreon folks, do not fret. You will get your allotted episodes that you get. You will get those, and don't worry about that. But as far as the main feed is concerned, I just want to take a little bit of break so I can live my life, get through what I need to get through, and actually give you give you something to comment on, give myself something to comment on, giving you some high quality podcasts. And I've just been going for a long time. And since the pandemic, the past almost 2 years, it's just been like, I don't think I've really stopped. So I need this. You need this. you need a break from me. So I think that's what's going to happen. It's just been a lot. I've been going for, the more I think about it, I've been doing it pretty. I've been going for quite some time, and I just don't want to burn out, and I don't want to have to dread doing episodes and half-assing it, because I know that I really like doing this, and I don't want to not like doing it. So, yeah, I think after the holidays, I'll be back with a vengeance. And I think what I'm gonna start doing is just doing more. I think I'm just gonna have to do what some podcasts, and I've been doing this by myself for as long as I've been, since 2013, since I want to say March of 2013. This is a one man operation. I do it all by myself. And I've been going and I need a break. And I think what I need to do is bank some conversations and release them, and then just take another break and bank and release. I don't know. I'm talking out loud. I don't know what I'm going to do, but I might be, I think that's what I may end up doing. But Patreon folks, don't fret. You will get your allotted episodes that you normally get. Just been really busy. Just with all this stuff going on. The holidays are around, dealing with that stuff. Just being in the city, in New York City, takes a lot out of you. It can wear on you. People are exhausting. People are really exhausting in New York City. I was on my way to the theater. I pay a lot of money to park in this garage on 49th and just in the 40s. I have this parking garage space, and I park it, and then I walk about 10 minutes to the theater. And as soon as I was coming out, this guy clocked me coming out. And he was like, "Oh, my brother, man. Oh, my God. You look just like my nephew in Jamaica. And I just need some help. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God." And he starts fake crying. And he says he lost $20 and he needs money to get on the bus. And I'm thinking to myself, first I told him, I said, "Look, man," I took my wallet out. I said, "Look, I don't have any money. I don't have any cash." And I felt bad for him. I was going to go to an ATM. But he seemed to be, he's like, "Oh, you know, I asked a white guy for money. He said, go ask Obama." And I was like, "God damn." But he wanted to get on the bus. And I'm thinking, you know, we're on 49th Street. And the Port Authority is like, you know, that's seven, eight blocks away. Why aren't you doing this act in front of the Port Authority? But I didn't say that. I said, "Man, I didn't have any money. But if I did have money, I would give it to him." Because it's not like I think I'm a nice person. I'm a decent guy. And because I don't go to church anymore and don't pay tithes, if I can help somebody, I will give them some money. It beats you up seeing all these people out homeless, and just some of them are strung out. And it's guys in the show that have been saying, like, they've never, like, Broadway veterans, just guys that have been doing theater for a long time in the city, just talking about how it's like they've never seen it before, with people just strung out, people homeless. I mean, one time I was walking to the theater, there was just a dude laid out in front of a building. Just, I don't know if he was high or what. It's just insane. And then, so after I left that guy, parted ways with that dude, there was a married couple that was asking me, "Hey, do you know how to get to the Copacabana?" I was like, "Well, did you look it up on your phone?" And they weren't trying to hustle me. They were just really trying to find this place. And I was like, it's on the east side. You got to go over to the east side or whatever. And he was like, "I don't know." And I like the fact that they were like a middle-aged black couple. And I said, "Where are you guys coming from?" They were like, "Brooklyn." And I was like, "Oh, yeah, the guy told you, I think the guy gave you the wrong address. You got to, you know, hop in a cab or get a lift or something and head over. You shouldn't walk," because at the time it was really cold. It was like close to 8 o'clock and it was getting, it was really cold. It's Mother Nature has been really bipolar, like having just like, you know, it was almost 60 degrees today, but in the morning it was cold. Yesterday it was kind of cold. It was just weird temperatures and whatnot. But I did like the fact that that couple thought I was cool enough to know where a club was. So that made me feel good. But I should have just told them, just if you go, like, because Hell's Kitchen is pretty cool. Like there's a lot of cool and interesting restaurants that I haven't been to a bunch of them, but I've been to maybe a couple, but I've just seen them as I was walking by, like, you know, going to the theater or leaving and going to my car. There's some cool spots. I should have just told them, I was like, "Hey, look, if y'all just trying to kick it, just go to one of these bars on 9th Avenue. Just walk up 9th Ave and see if you want to go into a spot. Because at Friday night, something is going on. But like when you're on 8th Avenue and walking up on the Broadway side, it's just a shit show. It's just people all over the place. It's people all over the place on other, but you could just imagine two different avenues that run parallel to each other. It's almost night and day. Yeah, but the closer you are to the Port Authority, the more and Penn Station, it's a bit of a shit show. And it's just not worth it. But you could definitely find something on 9th Avenue if you're walking up. But yeah, this past week was just really busy. One of my buddies hit me up and hung out with him after a show for a bit. So that was good to just kind of catch up with a friend, with one of my homies, and just because I was like, oh man, I got to go into the office the next day. But I was like, you know what, fuck it, man, you only live once, might as well just try to make the best of it and see somebody, see one of your pals, and get shot to shit and just went back home. This week, you know, I don't know, the highlight of my week, I would say, is that I ordered some KFC through Uber Eats, and it was good. I know Black Twitter is not going to like this. I know you're going to be like, Chris, what the fuck? You went to KFC, you got KFC. I'm not going to blame him. I'm going to credit the homie Rick Younger for he took a picture of this guy on the train. He didn't show his face or anything. He just took a picture of this dude that had a bucket of KFC and a bag of lottery tickets. And he texted it to me. And I was like, okay. I was like, KFC. I was like, man, you know, I haven't had I haven't had KFC in a minute. And I know Black Twitter, just, we love Popeyes. Collectively, we love Popeyes more than anything else. I think that's one thing. That's the one thing that Black Twitter can agree on, is that we love Popeyes. And my favorite Twitter, I don't know if it's a meme or what it is, but it's just a picture of somebody that had a bag of Popeyes and he put it in his passenger seat and put the seatbelt around it. This is the funniest shit ever. And it was just it was real. I was like, I understand where this guy's coming from. Popeyes is fantastic. But KFC, like the original recipe, it's not bad. And, you know, I was thinking, like, man, I don't have any groceries. I need to get something to eat for lunch. And I need something hearty before I, you know, go out to the theater and whatnot. And so I was working from home and I got this coupon. I got a coupon from Uber Eats and I just used the code and I said, you know what, let me get some chicken. Let me get an 8-piece. You know, that's, I can, you know, save some for later. And so I got an 8-piece, 2 biscuits and some coleslaw. And then I made some Brussels sprouts. I had some Brussels sprouts in the refrigerator. I fixed them up, put them in the oven and had a couple pieces of chicken, some Brussels sprouts and some coleslaw. And I was good money. And that was really, it was good. And I was, you know, and I didn't even have to, I ain't even put no hot sauce on it. I know it's blasphemy, but I ain't even put no hot sauce on it. So it was good, man. KFC is underrated. I know Popeyes might be y'all's king, our king collectively. But the Colonel, you know. You got some stuff, and that chicken sandwich isn't bad. I remember when I got my second vaccination shot. I went there and got the chicken sandwich, and it was good. It was good actually. So don't sleep on Popeyes. I know Rod is really going at Arby's. I don't know. Like, I don't know. There's some people that. I don't know when the last time I went to an Arby's, but that's a running thing that he talks about on the show. Him and Karen talk about it. There was an Arby's on Route 17 in New Jersey, here in New Jersey, but they I think it closed down, and I haven't been in ages. I don't even remember. But yeah, it's not like KFC is that, you know what I mean? But Yeah, I think Rick Younger was saying like, yeah, it's a generational. It's probably a generational thing. We did both as a kid. You know, when I was a kid, when I was growing up, we would get, sometimes we get Popeyes, sometimes we get KFC. And then some places around the country don't have as many Popeyes around, I don't think. But I like them both. And, you know, I have to add KFC to back in the rotation every now and then because it is good and it is underrated. I wanted to talk about a few things. I don't know how long this will be, but I wanted to talk about some TV shows and a play that I saw and some books that I read and one that I'm currently reading. I saw this play right before Thanksgiving called Trouble in Mind by Alice Childress. And Alice Childress was a playwright that I didn't know too much about. But this play, Trouble in Mind, is a satire. And it premiered in 1955 at the Greenwich Muse Theater. And it ran for like 91 performances. And this one was poised to go to Broadway, slated to go to Broadway. And the producers wanted her to change the ending to be more positive. And she said no. And so they shelved it. And then in 1959, Lorraine Hansberry's A Raisin in the Sun became the first black playwright to have a show produced on Broadway. And I was like, damn. And, this, you know, Trouble in Mind was touted as, you know, this is how Alice Childress wanted it. There's a really great piece in the New York Times that came out. I'm trying to see what the date on this was. But if you go to the New York Times, it came out November 3rd, this piece, and it was updated on November 4th. It talks about her, you know, as a playwright and then the issues that she had getting this play up. And I thought it was really fantastic. It's a satire about these. It's a play within a play. And the play that they're doing is, and in the show, is an anti-lynching play. And I kind of don't want to spoil it because I think if some people might be taking trips to New York City to see some Broadway. And I really don't want to spoil it, but, it's basically about this aging, this veteran black actress that is doing this Broadway play, and it's an anti-lynching play. And she basically butts heads with the director on issues with the play. And it is so good. I'm trying to think of any of the actors that you would know. You'd think that after all this, I would actually, let me see if I can get the cast here. It is fantastic. So the main cast, the woman, the lead of the play is this actress named LaShawn. She goes by one name, and she is, she's been in a lot of like theater, done a lot of theater. One of the biggest stars in it is, as far as TV is concerned, is Brandon Michael Hall, who was in this short-lived show on ABC called The Mayor. And he was in one of my favorite shows of recent memory, God Friended Me on CBS. You know, if you have me, CBS rarely has stuff that I'm interested in. I think people always joke that it's like an old person's network, but it was the show for millennials. It was basically, God Friended Me was like, what do you call that? Was it first edition or like almost like a ghostwriter type thing about God helping people? And this Brandon Michael Hall, his character was like the intermediary between God. And yeah, it was a good show. I liked it. He was in it. And then Jessica Frances Dukes, who is currently in Ozark. She was in last season and she's going to be in this current season. But it's a fantastic play. And then also Michael Ziegen, who's on The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. He plays Maisel's ex-husband. So it's actors that you've seen on TV and stuff. I think it's a fantastic show. And one of the, somebody that I know saw it. He was white and we were talking about it and he was like, I don't know. I thought it was too much, you know, with, I was like, well, dude, it's a satire. And, that's in order to get the message across. Sometimes things are going to be slightly exaggerated. Cause, the cast, some of the black characters were, in the play within the play, they were kind of cooning it up. And, I thought the shit was it was fucking fantastic. And it's just like, it was great. I really dug it. So they're closing pretty soon. So I guess they started previews in October 29th. And, they closed on January 9th. So as a lot of these shows are kind of getting relatively short runs, unless they're like the big musicals like Aladdin or Phantom of the Opera or, you know, Book of Mormon or something like that. So it's a limited run. And I don't know how many of you really are into theater and how many of you are in the New York area or tri-state area to come down and see it. But I think it's fantastic. And it makes me want to get, I think I'm going to do, when I decide to buy more books and plays and stuff, like I'll read her anthology of plays because it's really good. And it's and they did not. So the way that the show goes down on Broadway is the way that Alice Childress intended it to go, the way that she wrote it. And apparently just in my research, they did a reading of it a few years ago. And did a reading of it and it was, they did it as in the way that she intended it to be produced. And it's just, you know, you think of the Raisin in the Sun, while it's a great play, it's doing something differently, but it's still more palatable than what Trouble in Mind is, because Trouble in Mind is basically an attack on the industry, on show business. The way that it's written, and Raisin in the Sun is essentially a kitchen sink drama about a family trying to overcome their, you know, shortcomings and their given circumstances and trying to, you know, elevate and do better. It's about a lot of other things too, but just in a nutshell, that's kind of what it's about. Black, you know, after the death of somebody, they're trying to, you know, we sometimes black folks can only come up after somebody dies and they get some insurance money and all of that stuff. But this is like, you know, two fantastic shows, each doing different things. But I would be remiss if I didn't talk about it a little bit. And, you know, maybe if you can't come see it, read it. It's actually really good. It's a really good show. And I think you would like it. But it was so cool for this to be my first Broadway show back. It was really awesome. I'd seen I saw Merry Wives at Shakespeare in the Park, but going into an actual, that was outside and at the Delacorte, I believe, and in Central Park. But this one was great. You know, I had never been in the American Airlines Theater and to see that space and to have good seats. It was awesome. It's just, I love doing theater. All this being around in this Broadway world is really, cool. And I hope I get to do it on a bigger platform, a bigger stage at some point. I'm hoping that I can, we'll see what happens. But, to get that taste of it, man, it's inspiring and it's a beautiful thing to watch. I want to talk about some television. I watched this show, Harlem, that premiered on Amazon Prime last week. I watched it Friday. I think I watched, it's 10 episodes. I watched about 9 of them during the day. And when I got home from the theater, I watched the last episode. I really dug it. I really enjoyed it. I think I have it pulled up. It's just a show about four ambitious best friends, Camille, Ty, Quinn, and Angie. They're navigating their relationships and careers in Harlem, New York City. And I auditioned for this show twice for the same role. Did not book it. I saw the person who booked it and I was like, But I watched the show. I liked it. And I watched it and texted one of my homies like, yo, you watching this? He was like, nah, not yet. But I was like, yo, I'm digging this. It's just like a fun, it's really like Amazon's version of like Run the World. Like Run the World was on Stars. You know, I had Clark Jones on the show, who's a writer for Run the World, one of the writers on that show. And it's just another version of these black women that, you know, figuring shit out, dating and dealing with their parents and other things like that, dealing with things that, you know, characters do, but it's mainly like dating. You know, it's like these shows that are like black Sex in the City, Sex in the City, but with black women. I've seen enough episodes to kind of say that they're similar, but it's with black girls and they're beautiful. All of them are hot and it's funny. I was just engaged and, you know, a show is good. Like, and I think I told Clark this when we were talking about Run the World, but when you're invested in the characters, you're like, oh, you're like talking at the TV and when you're alone in your apartment and watching it and enjoying it. And it was good to see Megan Good, who's essentially the lead of the show, to see her be fun and quirky and charming and goofy and to have a little bit of fun in a role where she's not just a sex pot. You know, obviously she's gorgeous, but it was cool to see her show some range and just be like a really interesting character that you see her white counterparts do all the time. So it's good to see these black women doing these funny roles and being funny and sexy at the same time. And it was good, man. So there was a scene in the show where one of the gay where the lesbian character, Ty, is getting a haircut in the barbershop. And I'm only talking about this because I saw people kind of going back and forth about it on social media, on the Twitter, on the Bird, talking about it. And, you know, so the scene is basically Ty is gay and she was in getting her haircut getting like a Caesar or whatever. And her barber's cutting her hair. There's another barber talking to another guy, being loud, talking about hooking up with a woman and being very, very misogynistic and very toxic and talking his shit. And Ty was like, yo, you going to check your guy right there? Are you going to check this dude? He's like, all right, we family, but she's like, yeah, but we family. I've been coming here for a long time. I'm paraphrasing the scene. And he's like, well, this guy's my family, blah, blah, blah. And he was like, yo, I can't. And then, so this woman, Ty, in the middle of getting her haircut, she bounces. She's like, I'm out. I can't deal with this. And she leaves and people were mad about that and arguing about the fact that why she left. And it's, you know, the guys always, you know, where I'm from, you know, they turn the music down when the women are in the shop and they don't curse in the barbershop. It's like, well, that's your experience. In the world of this show, this guy's being an asshole talking about women and shit like that, saying they'll fuck you for a 6-piece McNuggets with no fries and shit like that. And she was like, yo, I'm not down with this. I'm good on this. And she leaves. She decides to leave. And people were mad about that. But it's like, just because that never happened to you doesn't mean it hasn't happened to somebody. And it's like people want to see their life reflected back in front of them on TV. And it's not always going to be like that. You know, I've kind of found that dumb. I looked at that scene. I was talking to one of my homies about it. And I was like, I looked at that scene and I was just like, oh God, I hope she doesn't have to go to Supercuts. I hope she can go somewhere where she can get her shit like taken care of before, you know, because the character had to do this really big photo shoot that was going to be on a magazine or whatever. And so it was just like, yeah, that's kind of all I thought. And I just moved on with the scene. And actually, because I had a conversation like that with my barber and it was just me and him. And I'm thinking about turning it into a bit. I actually talked to two of my good comedian friends, two of them, and was just like, yo, but if I, you know, there's sensitive words that are, that we discussed in that real conversation that happened last week. And I was like, yeah, can I say that? Can I do this? And I was like, I'll think about it and I may try it as a bit, but, it's fascinating the things that people latch on to that I kind of was not necessarily dismissive about, but I was just like, oh, interesting scene, you know. Let me see if I can find that. I thought that I may have. Okay, so this is a. Someone said, okay, so there's somebody named MBE. His handle is MBE M Power, a betrayed maroon. So this guy says he records a video, like a 45-second video of the scene in question. And he says the savage black male trope is alive and well since 1905's Birth of a Nation. Except this time it's not the KKK that wrote this scene. It's black male misandrist Malcolm D. Lee and Tracy Oliver that greenlit this. So Tracy Oliver is the creator of this show. And she worked with Issa Rae on Awkward Black Girl. She, if you don't remember her, she was the girl, the woman who was Issa's nemesis on what's her name on the show? Jay? I think it's Jay. Anyway, you know, Issa's the Awkward Black Girl's nemesis on Awkward Black Girl. And this is her show. And I think Malcolm D. Lee directed. I don't know if he directed this episode. And this dude was like, FYI, in almost 50 years, I ain't never seen this happen. FOH, so fuck out of here. I think he just got offended that these dudes were acting like assholes. And then Ty walked out. But guys talk like that in the barbershop. Yeah, was it a little heightened? Probably. But, you know, like I said, and sometimes this isn't satire per se, but sometimes things are exaggerated slightly in order to make a point, to order to get a point across. But I don't think that this is anything bad. I think some people just do that. I think it's just a scene in a TV show. And so Van Lathan quote tweeted this and said, yo, I agree 100%. Been in barbershops from L.A. to New York to Louisiana and have never, all caps, seen type of disrespect towards a lady. There are mothers dropping off sons, ladies getting cuts, ladies selling pies and food, and it's always love. This portrayal saddens me. And this is something that happens every time a black show comes out. Like, people always try to, they want to critique it and just be so heavy handed with their reviews and stuff. And I'm not trying to. And on this podcast, what I've done for the past 9 years or so, I like to talk about the things that I like. If I don't like something, I'll say I don't like it, but I try not to shit on it. It may not be for me, but for the most part, I don't try not to shit on things. Sometimes I just won't talk about it if I don't like it. But yeah, it's I find it annoying. I find it troublesome. I find it kind of dumb to just have such a defensive reaction towards something like this. It's a scene in a TV show. And that character took a stand and was like, yo, I don't need this shit. I don't need to be listening to this shit. I'm paying money to get my hair cut, and I don't need to listen to this ignorant ass shit. I don't care. Like, if I've hooked up with somebody, I'm not in the barbershop talking about it. To me, it's almost on some insecure bullshit, unless you're talking about it with friends and or something like that. But it's just ugh. Should be above that now. I'm not trying to be, I'm working. I'm always work. I'm constantly working at trying to be better, trying to be a better person. I don't always succeed, but my God, it's really annoying at this point for people. And these are supposed to be, I don't know, the cool kids. Like, I would assume Van Lathan, I'm assuming this dude would be one of the cool kids with all the followers and all this stuff. It's for them to be so short-sighted. It's almost like, how much depth do these people really have, to be honest with you? I don't know. And I don't know this dude. I don't know who he, I don't really know him like that. But, and then, let's see. Okay. So Michael Arsenault, who I believe is a writer. I think he is a writer, and he is a queer person. And he responded to this, and he said, I don't know if it would sound exactly like this in terms of dialogue, but we all should take into account that our lived experiences aren't the only ones. Exactly. Plenty of gay/queer black folk know this scene. I wrote about it. I wrote about an experience not unlike this in my first book. Boom. And there you go. And so then Van Lathan goes back and says, this is back and forth. But he was like, yeah, I get that. But what I'm saying is that we all fight to protect the images and narratives that are propagated about each other. We have to be inclusive about it. That scene has a specific aggression to it and a failure for anyone to check the speech. Well, she kind of checked it by leaving. And maybe that dude doesn't have a client anymore in Thai for him to say, yo, can you chill and stop talking? Yeah, it was exaggerated. But I mean, he could have said, you know, that character, you know, could have said, hey, man, chill out, you know. I don't know. I think people make a big deal out of a whole lot of nothing. And that's what this scene was. It was a scene where that character made a decision. It was like, I don't need this shit. And I don't see what's wrong with that. I do not see anything wrong with that. And Michael Arsenault proves my point there. So there you go. I didn't even see that until now. It's so annoying. And you don't really see that with other shows. You don't see that kind of commentary. So I really liked Harlem. I recommend it. It was really fun. Maybe I'll get to be a love interest next season with somebody. I don't know. No, maybe they'll let me on the show doing something. I think I auditioned for 2 parts and didn't get it. Okay, whatever. And see, I like the show. I didn't get booked on the show, and I still like it. After they made me audition twice. That was my last audition in person was for that show. And I was on my way to a preview for the show that I'm in now. And before the shutdown, that was the day right before everything shut down. That was my last in-person audition for that show. And then months later, they asked me to audition for it again, that same part. And they still didn't book me. And look at me. I'm a good person because I still watch the show. One guy was saying to me, oh, if I don't get it, if I don't book the part, I don't watch it. I was like, well, ain't going to be watching a lot of shit then, dude. So another show that I watched, Pen 15, which is a show on a comedy dramedy. It's back in the dramedy on Hulu. It's mainly played for laughs, but it's a hybrid. How about that? The Maya Erskine and Anna Conkle show about these 13-year-old kids, these women that are in their early 30s, and they portray themselves at younger ages. And their classmates are played by actual kids that are 13, 14. It ended, and they did part two of the second season. And it ended, and I thought it was really good. It was a really terrific show. I highly recommend it if you haven't seen it. Actually, I think when Luisa Diaz was on the show, if not earlier this year, maybe last year, she was on and we talked about it. And we were talking about like some of the cringe-worthy thing, the cringy aspects of the show. They really went for it in the last episode, where it was like, oh shit, y'all are going there with certain aspects of it. But I really dug it. And I think there was a piece in the Washington Post that talked about the nature of, let me see if I can find it, about how it's a, like a portrait of Asian American, like, girlhood. This woman, Inku Kang, a TV critic for the Washington Post, she wrote the come on, Chris. The title of it was, Pen 15 was a radically honest, thoroughly singular show about Asian American girlhood. And I'm going to back this. I'm going to back this up. I'm going to agree with that, because it's like nothing I've ever seen in the modern era when it comes to, you know, kids growing up, definitely coming of age. And I've said this before. I really like these two actresses. Anna Conkle is terrific. Maya Erskine is a fucking star. And I've been saying this since I saw her in this movie called Plus One that came out maybe 2015, I want to say. Nope, 2019. Shit, I'm sorry. Came out in 2019 and is on Hulu currently. It's a rom-com. And I was watching this, and Maya Erskine's been on quite a few episodes of Insecure, actually. And like, I think the second season, first or second season, she was one of Maya's Molly's coworkers at her old firm. I just think this is she's a star, and she is so, like, on a surface level, it's like, oh my God, look at these 30-year-old women playing 13-year-olds. Isn't that funny? Isn't that cringe when they talk to these boys that are really 14 and 13, blah, blah, blah. Her real mother, Mutsuko Erskine, is playing her mother on the show. And the dynamic that she has with her mother, the way that she acts, it's phenomenal. It's like an amazing performance. And I'm like gushing over her. She's like, it's something to behold. And I know if JL Covan is listening to this, he's going to roll his eyes. Cause I'm bigging up this actress, but I think she's terrific. The show is terrific. I don't remember going through this much as a preteen kid, but it's not from a boy's perspective. It's from these young women's perspective, and they did an animated episode that I believe Anna Conkle wrote and directed. That was like a in between thing. I guess maybe they did it during the pandemic, and then they did like the last. Let me see how they did these last few episodes. Like, I think it was like maybe seven of them, I want to say. I think it's unfair to call it a cringe comedy. Let's see, this is what the wiki says. Cringe comedy is a specific genre of comedy that derives humor from social awkwardness. Often a cringe comedy will have an air of mockumentary and revolve around a serious setting, such as a workplace, to lend the comedy in a sense of reality. Okay. Okay. So cringe, I had the connotation that the negative connotation that it was just like body humor or something gross. That's what I was thinking. Okay. So I misinterpreted that term. Let me see. So they split it up. Okay. So they did seven episodes that came out in September of last year. And then they did this episode eight was called Jacuzzi, and that was animated. That was an animated special. And then part two was episodes 9 through 15. And that premiered this past weekend, December 3rd. I really think this is a fantastic series. And they both ended because I think they both just became new moms. And I think they might have been like, yo, I'm trying to be with my kid. I think they ended it themselves. You know, I'm excited to see what they do next, because I really dig both of these actresses. And I'm just a really big fan of Maya Erskine. I'll watch her. She's become one of those actors where I'll be like, I'll watch her in anything that she's in. Terrific. Read that piece from the Washington Post if you can, Inku Kang. And it's very interesting. I mean, I think if you're a person of color, you can easily relate to this. And it's one I don't even want to give anything away, but there's a couple of episodes that deal with Maya's Asianness. And it's very complex. It's very complex, you know, and not like it's over, you know, just complex in its simplicity of like the visceral emotions that you could, you know, see her have. And she's working with a lot of different things. So I think it's fantastic. So that's a television I've been watching. So I highly recommend Harlem and Pen 15. I need a new show to watch that's like pleasant and fun. Like both, I think Harlem and Pen 15 are both that. Pen 15 got just really poignant at some moments, that just like really beautiful moments in that. Harlem is just like a fun show about people in New York trying to figure shit out. Yeah. So I got some books that I read. I've said on Patreon, I finished the Will Smith book, which I really loved. I think if you're a fan of Will Smith, I think you'll enjoy it. And I was saying, like, I might even want to go back and get into the audio book, because it's him doing reading through the book, and then there's different, like, there's a production value in it. I think there's like music and stuff going on, so eventually I'll check that out. I would like to talk to you about some books that I've read. I finished this book last week called What Made Maddie Run, The Secret Struggle and Tragic Death of an All-American Teen. And this was written by Kate Fagan, who was formerly of ESPN, and she's currently with Meadowlark Media. And a few years back, she did this story on ESPN, basically about this young woman, Maddie Holloran, who was a high school soccer and track star, went to Penn, and her second semester of her freshman year, tragically killed herself. And the piece was about how could this like young, beautiful, all-American teen, why would she decide to kill herself? And this was in 2014 when it happened. And I remember this was right around the time where I got Instagram, like, because I got a Samsung phone. I got my first smartphone in around 2014. And that's when I got Instagram, and I had Twitter and Facebook before, but I think, you know, I didn't really pay attention to stuff. I guess I wasn't made aware of how social media in a way is like how we curate our lives on social media. How, oh, this is me doing a show. I'm killing it doing stand up. I'm in this play. I'm meeting these famous people. I'm opening for Chris Hardwick, and I'm doing these shows. I'm opening for Bill Burr. I took a picture with him, and blah, blah, blah. Look at me doing this stuff. But nobody sees like this stuff when I'm like by myself, or I'm sad, or I'm thinking about X. I'm thinking about death. I'm thinking about certain things. Or do I have enough money? How am I going to pay my bills, or blah, blah, blah. And nobody really knows what's going on in a person's mind. And if you were to look at Maddie Holloran's Instagram, I think it's still up. I remember when the piece came out, and I remember like, I just remember like looking at it, I was like, God, this girl's like a beautiful girl and she's got everything going for her. She grew up and she lived in Allendale, New Jersey, which is 15 minutes up the road from me. And I had, you know, family, I had friends that lived, whose parents lived in that area. I've been to a person's house that lived there. It's a nice, you know, middle-class family, upper middle-class, like people in the money, Bergen County, you know, and you just look at her Instagram, and I don't know if it's still up. I'm clicking on it now. It is actually, is this it? I don't know that this is it. I don't think this is the one. No, I don't think this. I don't know if that her original page is still up. But at one point, I remember at one point it was. And it's kind of eerie looking back. Yeah, this isn't. At one point, her Instagram was actually up after she passed. And you could see how, like, she had these, like, you know, pictures of her playing soccer and, you know, her life with her friends. And it just looked like an all-American kid, happy, good-looking young kid and living her life to its fullest. And just in the inside, she was going through a lot of pain. And instead of, like, reaching out for help, you know, she ended up killing herself. And the book basically is about it's just trying to figure out why she did this. And it's also like kind of Kate Fagan goes under the hood of that. And then she talks a little bit about her life. And I was always interested in the story and just wanted to just know a little bit more about it. And it's a really interesting book. I did like it. I kind of plowed through it. I think it's a little less than 300 pages, but it was a quick read nonetheless. And I really enjoyed it. And yeah, I recommend it. I did tweet at her and tell her, you know, because I was moved by that story. And it's something you can kind of, I think you can learn from that too, because, you know, it made me think about that stuff a lot more. About Instagram. I mean, that is, you do post your highlights, the cool stuff that you're doing and all that. But I'm 41. And at the time of her death, I was 34. So I had grown up, I was all, or about to be 34. And I grew up without, I think that was the first generation. And even like, even when I think about Pen 15, like people in that generation, like Maya and Anna would be like 7 years younger than me. So I don't know if they grew up when everything was online, when they were in those formative years of being like a preteen, young adult, where they were kind of online way more than I was. And I think AI AIM, because yeah, back in 2000, AOL Instant Messenger was a big thing. And I was already in college. I was like 20 years old. So it is a big difference. Like being less than a decade older than those two girls, the Maya Erskine and Anna Conkle. It's a difference. It's a big difference. Maddie Holleran would have been, she was 19 when she died. So yeah, that was her whole life up until she passed was like online. And those girls were on Instagram in high school. And so it is a thing. Cause like, if you look at somebody and you're depressed and then you look at somebody else's Instagram and be like, God, this person's killing it. I do it. I see it all the time. You see people post stuff that they're doing these shows and how they get on that show. And you got passed at the Cellar and you're like, and then you're just at home, eating pizza and watching and just like watching TV or some shit. And there, you know, you got that FOMO and all that stuff. Little Brother had a song about that. What's the record that they had on May the Lord Watch, about like FOMO and, what is it? What's the record? Let me see. I didn't know I was going to talk about this. Is it Sitting Alone? Sitting Alone is the record on track number 11 on May the Lord Watch. Yeah, it's a thing, man. It's and it could affect old people like me too. And I'm kind of like falling back from Twitter a little bit too, like social media. I think when you're busy, you in a lot of ways don't have time for some of this bullshit, but it's sad, man. It was just like a sad story. I remember being moved by it and just wanting to read more. And it is a really good book. So I highly recommend that. But the subject matter is kind of it's intense and it's kind of sad. I don't know. I've kind of been drawn to, well, Will Smith was fun. His book was fun. Giannis went through a lot of turmoil before he made it. You know, I've read like a bunch of stuff. Cecily Strong, I've read some books this year, man, way more than I have before, and I want to continue to do that. So the book that I'm currently reading is another book by Kate Fagan called All the Colors Came Out. What is it? All the Colors Came Out, A Father, A Daughter, and A Lifetime of Lessons. It's about Kate Fagan and her relationship with her father. And I didn't know this book was out. So, I was like, oh, I think I may have seen, Kate Fagan is with the Meadowlarkers, with Meadowlark Media now, with Dan Le Batard. Howard Bryan is also over there, friend of the show, Howard Bryan. And I was just like looking up to buy, order What Made Maddie Run. And then I saw that she had another book. I was like, oh, shit. Well, let me just get this, too. So I got both of them. So I'm reading that one now. And hopefully I'll be finished with it this week. But, yeah, I'm enjoying that so far, too. And What Made Maddie Run is also a bestseller. So this is, you know, this one's about her father who recently passed away from ALS. And it's just about her. So far about her relationship with her dad. So I've been reading. That's what I've been reading. I think I have a couple, maybe some other. So because of my old age, while I was watching Harlem, the music's great on this. And it's just a lot like Insecure, where the music is just top notch and you're just constantly rewinding and shazamming to see what song it is so you can add it to a playlist and or maybe get to know more about the artists that are performing on there, you know. And this record, I was watching it. There's a record, oh my God, I thought that I had my phone and I don't have my phone. This artist named Emmanuel, and he's got this album out called Art Therapy. And I believe it is his debut. I was trying to, maybe I can just open up Apple Music on my thing here and find it. Oh, come on. Yeah, it's called Alt Therapy, A-L-T Therapy. And I listened to this. The record that they played on Harlem was called Need You, which is the first record on the album. And I listened to that. I was like, oh, this song's great. So I listened to this. Solid. Very good. I dug it. I listened to that on the way to the show on Friday. So I like him. And what else have I been listening to? Moonchild. Moonchild has a new album coming out called Starfruit. And they put out a couple singles. And Moonchild is just consistently just in the pocket with their shit. Like the music that I really dig is just the mid-tempo kind of jazzy flavor. And they got two records that are available to listen to from the forthcoming album that is coming out in February 11th of 2022. A record called You Got One with Alex Isley and a record called Too Good. I've talked to you guys about Moonchild before. I think Moonchild is terrific. It's like they're this group, I think they're LA based. And I think they met at Berklee School of Music. I could be wrong, but I think they did. I remember seeing them. If I didn't see them in 2018, it might have been. I don't remember when it was that I saw them, but I think it was like, it was that time I went, the last time I went to Brooklyn Bowl, and I had on like a hoodie and some jeans or something, and I felt like I was one of the oldest people there, and I felt like people thought I was an undercover cop. That might have been going into 20, God, because it might have been around the same time that I saw, when did that Chadwick Boseman movie come out that he did, 21 Bridges? When did that come out? Did that come out in 2019? So it might have been going into 2020 that I saw, because I remember going to Brooklyn Steel in 2019. I saw 21 Bridges after work one day. It was in the Bronx, and there were like some black people in the back of the theater near, sitting in the same row as me, and they were eating Popeyes. They were kind of loud too. I was annoyed that they were loud and also kind of jealous because they had Popeyes. And I said, damn, I should have thought of that. But the movie 21 Bridges was good. R.I.P. Chadwick Boseman. I enjoyed it. And then I went down to Brooklyn to see Claire Whelan and San Fermin, the band at Brooklyn Steel. So that, I think that was 2019. Huh. So maybe I saw Moonchild a couple months earlier. I'd like to think that I did. I don't remember. Everything's just kind of a blur. But anyway, Moonchild is terrific. If you are into my music suggestion, if you like my music recommendations, then I think you'll dig Moonchild. Emmanuel had some good records on this Alt Therapy album. I found it good. And maybe you might just like, I would say listen to the first track, see if you dig that. I think, folks, I've talked enough. I really appreciate everyone listening. And I will be back. I will talk to you next time. Take it easy, everybody.